This is discombobulated now, but this is a poem called The Click. You know that sweet, you know that sweet sharp note, the ping of straight and true connection between opposites. When the stubborn lock gives, or the lid of the jar engages in a long for suddenly effortless mating of tongue and groove. That's born of trial and patience. The even click track in the jogger's carotid, pulsing out tang as he enters a measured and breathless dream. That singing click when the slitter meets the maker gifted sweet mark of the stick, or when a word unbidden spies its partner and asks it to rhyme. It must be measured, can't be forced, will only be begged for in vain. Think of how in the Friday night back bar, with the fiddling and nicotine tangible, of how we're autumny balm of something like cinnamon, like sandalwood, made your very veins accelerate. As into your beer sweetened ken, it snapped like a solution that she would always be your lover. As she looked up for the first time from her tumbler of gold, looked you up and down from her bar stool and suddenly stalled, and grinned before beckoning with her lean arms to come over. Thanks.
Raven. Some of y'all know me, have heard this one already before. It's called Pomegranate, based on the idea that supposedly the pomegranate was the fruit on the tree of knowledge, and beginning of the year it's time to take a look back at the last year and see what the hell I learned. Unfortunately, January 2013 begins much like January of 2012, with my ass still broke and out of work and trying to stop my ass from being eaten alive in this concrete jungle. But I remind myself that nothing sown and no harvest. Nothing reaped and I starve. Disconnected from the earth, yet resurrected from the dearth of such grounded company. And I will return to you all. Not beyond the pale, but in its midst I dug this, a furrow through anxious flesh, a long season of amnesia, all recollections threshed, reincarnations crushed, perpetually swaddled, coddled, spirits distilled and senses bottled, in a fashionable doubt outdated while I waited for next year's model, when truth's expression is cultivated. Clear as thought, ruminated, for do we not chew before we swallow? Of course. We follow a slow and dedicated horse that pulls this plow through a Sunday painter's pastorals. The printed floral patterns of half-eaten lotus, their scent recalled in scratch and sniff and aerosol and rendered artlessly. More alcohol than alchemy. Stuck in this rut. Stuck in this rut. Stuck in this rut, the glut of too many splendid things, and pushing till pained it springs, herring red the blood that's drained from beauty in the magazines, all dressed for burial. For life more mechanical than mercurial, yet bleeding in goods minus needs, fruit minus seeds. The immaculate abortion of our innocence, in a sense, although it remains intact in the condescending backslap. Good man, good job, good man, good job, well done in Babylon, yeah. Little elbow grease, nose to the grindstone, and then one day, you too can own a mobile home. Go where buffalo no longer roam. See what's left of your country with propane and cable hookup. The sacred and profane say, sky is failing. Don't look up. While I find nothing stays in its place, and in their haste they made a wasteland, but a raven? I said a raven fed Elijah in the desert on a hard bap in the tender trapped delicacies. See, I have been leaner, wallet to gullet. Have lived on less nourishment, never heaven sent, and been sated on tasteless sacraments. Have kept only effigies of ecstasy, parodies of rapture. Captured and held the frenetic grace of my hand shaking closer to my heart than belly to the ground. Found more than one snake in this garden asking, what more then? This grain of truth. This grain of truth stored not by stiff little fingers, but by burnished palms calling us to rise. To work that heals in decomposing the music of killing fields. And the spade, the plain and worthy scythe, blade black as my name and its might remains my rudiment, resilient and radiant. Ah, will learn yet to feed myself between this garden's hardened lines, indelible. Will meditate, pull down and hold tight that labored fruit's blunt hide, inedible. Anticipate the taste, and with passionate intent, ah, the secret becomes evident. And I split the pith to spill its thousand blushing seeds.
If you're on the open mic, you've got two short ones or one long one. That's for Edward O'Dwyer, two short ones or one long one, because he's next on the open mic. Two short ones or one long one?
It's two short ones, Ed, or one long one.
Yeah, I'm going to interpret the word short my own way. When a couple of American friends pointed out to me that I use the word grand a lot, it wasn't a huge revelation. No, this is what Irish people do. But, thinking about it gave me this poem called Grand. I hope I'll never have to suffer the pain of being grand. I mean of being really grand. Not that grand we say we are when we mean we're really not. And then others agree they too are grand when they are so far from it. I imagine famished bodies in the wasteland bogs of Ireland back in 1845. Telling one another how grand they are. One-upping each other any way they can on that then and still not yet calibrated scale of grandness Irish people seem to feel innately in their blood and bones. And if you were even to ask Irish history how it is, don't you know you'd be told grand? And you should also know that the same history's grandness gave you the grandness you express today and every day. But there is that understanding between you that grand doesn't really exist and never will in an Irish future. And in a way, that's, as you say, grand, because you'd never want it to. The idea is so frightening. So ghostly. And were we ever grand? And again, of course, I mean really grand. We'd probably never get over it. Telling each other we're grand and meaning exactly that. That's a short poem, Jennifer.
Do you have much shorter than the next one?
All right. I'll read this because I had my dinner in Jackie Lennox's earlier. I lived in Cork for a little bit and I used to love Jackie Lennox's. It's one of the things I miss most about the place. One of the big motivations for why I'm thinking about moving back.
They're fabulous chick shots.
I don't know, the hygiene went down the drain in Donkey Ford's. So, we have Donkey Ford's. That's the one you need to go to, but bring some disinfectant. So this is called the chip shop. There's a bit of lust in this. There she is again. Even your unspoken thoughts you think in whispers as you find yourself there once more. Another Saturday night you're spending in watching the telly. If she knew the things you thought as she has shoveled your chips in a brown paper bag, your two battered sausages, extra salt and vinegar, predictable as rain on a bank holiday weekend. Again, your eyes wait patiently as ever, giving nothing away. For the moment from now, she'll go to the till with your always crumpled fiver. Their chance to undo the bow-tied strings of her apron, fondle the tight denim of her arse, with just the allure alone of her deep-fried perfume, raising your cholesterol.
Tour number 12, Dockyard. The rasping scream unleashes a cascade of sparks angling across steel decks to the last green half pile and beyond, where the springtide line is drawn black on green, landweed strewn with seaweed. Welders, blue arc, sizzles, and pyrotechnic burst as the heron gazes like Narcissus into his likeness. Silence again, except for the steady rhythm. He turns his long neck to gape at the squashed hose, pulsing to plumpness where it droops lightly over the edge. The hidden pump gushes its mantra, pachum, pachum, pachum. And this one is from Revival. First poem in it. High noon. Cocooned in a gown of dragons, staring, he sits in the hallway, right thumb on a rim, Marconi fading away from the remote day room TV. The other one, cumbersome, dissecting his cardigan, a sandaled foot on each wrist, a waft of brown soda, pungent and poignant as cordite. Unaware of the danger, a patron at peace with the world, plods between the park chairs, puckers his lips, pockets a tissue of teat. A kaleidoscopic wall hanging, the stained slash of sunlight, seraphic, sacred and silent. Unblinking, they face one another. Who'll draw that first bead? 20 chrome revs apart, derringers still trousered. A clumsy bedpan bongs clear as an angelus bell. Two right hands lift as one. Thank you.
Thank you, Seamus. Next up, please welcome Josephine.
I'm using the Edward O'Dwyer system of long and short poems.
Oh no.
King of the suburbs. Think of me in my prime. Lithe, lovely, sublime. scrambling up fences or branches, lord of the trees, king of the moonlit suburbs, emperor of back gardens, loftily surveying little human lives, free of your settlements. All you see of me now is squashed on the roadway, gleaming meat, a mess of inner organs. The stuff the butcher brushes quickly down the hole of his great wooden bench in his back room, where you never see, or want to see, or think about. Remember me as one who some hold sacred. Remember me young, beautiful, and free until that inanity when my tenth life began, when I ran out joyfully to be dismissed by a machine, squashed into oblivion by hard, inanimate metal, driven by one who didn't even flinch, didn't care, didn't even notice. I am here now with my feline ancestors, above the clouds, higher than birds and men, awaiting the reckoning, for all to be righteous again, for that reckless driver to be hauled up to face our cat laws, where great Leo himself sits curled on his throne, in judgment, listening, and polishing his claws. The importance of saying sorry. Sorry. Remember to say sorry. When you drive right behind me, inches from my bumper, on a narrow country road, at breakneck speed, until I am finally forced to pull over to let you pass, please remember to open your window and wave as you drive by and say sorry. Sorry, but I'm in a hurry. And not just once, but several times. Sorry. 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 The repetition is good too. The way at the end of a call, you shouldn't really say goodbye. You must say, bye-bye. Like you're saying goodbye in Morse as well. Sorry. This would show real remorse. Sorry, but I rang last week and there was no answer. You weren't in. And the week before, sorry, you missed me. Sorry, because you had the misfortune to be out when I called, that you didn't know in advance that I would be calling, and you could have suspended your day, your whole life, so you could have been there for me. Sorry, I'm sorry for you, that you didn't take your mobile with you so I could contact you, and you could have met my needs. Sorry. So sorry. Sorry, but I have to turn on the Hoover now, and I know you're watching television. Sorry, but I have no choice. My hands are tied. I've been taken hostage. You don't think this is my life I'm living, do you? I'm doing this for you. I'm helpless. I'm hostage. You never paid the ransom. You never had enough. That's the problem. I'm sorry. Remember just before you pushed me aside in order to get the shop door before me. Remember to say sorry, even as you elbow me aside. Once you say sorry at the same time, everything will be all right. I will know that even though your elbow is in my face, you don't mean anything personal against me. It's simply that I'm in the way, and you have a more urgent destiny to fulfill than little old me. Remember, sorry. Remember, when you point that pram at the crowd and barge forward into the thicket, forcing it to separate like the Red Sea, remember to say very loudly and clearly over the screeching of the little baby inside the pram, sorry, sorry, sorry. It's important that everyone hears you, that everyone knows how sorry you are for what you are about to do. Remember the power of words. Excuse me, please. That can clear a crowd just as surely as a weapon, a lance. Everyone looks at you, distracted in that moment by the horror of you, and fatally hesitate, and in that hesitation, you can proceed to do whatever ill-mannered thing you want and get away with it, and disappear in a self-righteous mist of public contrition, your voice still echoing in the astonished ears of your victim. Sorry. We loaned you 4 times what the house was worth. Now you'll be paying back for it for the rest of your life, and your children too. Sorry.
A short piece of prose. There's just one thing. At the end of it, I introduce a character, and his name is Weights and Measures, just so it doesn't confuse. PJ Healy's shop was broken into, and everyone was talking about it. PJ was dead years, but it still said PJ Healy over the door, and everyone called it PJ's, though his son ran it. The grocery shop was to the front, and in the baking counter where bald Bill McKeown in a white shop coat rested with large tins of corned beef. After poking and prodding with the knife, he'd shake the tin vigorously, and turning it upside down, he'd say, "It's the vacuum," and puncture the bottom of the tin with a jag of a knife, and out would slide a perfectly formed cuboid of corned beef. He'd wrap it loosely in greaseproof paper and place it on the red slicer. He always said the jelly at the bottom of the tin was the sweetest. If I wanted anything like tap washers, or a hank of window cord, or a pound of 3-inch ovals, 2 pound of 2-inch wires, brass butt hinges, T-hinges, bolts, locks, a fuse, number 12 screws, blue tacks. I went to Des in the hardware for it. He wrapped everything in brown paper, and if I wanted anything from the yard, he gave me a docket. I'd bring the docket down the steps to Eugene with the tartan cap and red tassel on it in the yard. He'd be standing in the dark shed smoking and see you coming, and then we'd go into the first shed with the low brown boarded ceiling and one light bulb hanging from a cord that I could touch if I wanted to. He'd take down a piece of wire with other dockets on it from a nail in the ceiling inside the door over the scales, and stick my docket on it, and hang it back up, and then weigh out half a stone of Clorinda into a paper bag, for instance. And if I needed something upstairs like 3 gutter bolts and nuts and washers, or a swan neck, he'd have to turn on the light and go up and get it. So when they were robbed, I knew the window that was broken, but nobody knew much about it or what was taken. There was a good chance the robbers were from Dublin, and one of them did his business in the middle of the yard. That was the only evidence the guards found, and everybody heard about it. Weights and Measures shook his head and blew out a fan of sweet afton smoke from under his top lip and said, We had little to be going on with if all you had to talk about was the shite of a Dublin courier. I was over for a fill of blue paraffin for the heater 2 days later, and I looked for traces of it. And I was going to ask Eugene, but he had gone to England to work.
Next up, please welcome Joe Collins.
Short is good anyway, I'm good at short. Motivation drifts sometimes when one's got too much time to realign, redesign and reaffirm one's terms in this world. When one no longer knows the source, that where it begins, nor the flow at which humanity goes and so falters to and fro, here and there, threadbare. Keep strong, relax, don't feel alone nor have a freak attack. Everything will work out soon, everything will sit right back. This was a 5-word challenge with Julie Fields at Calman's over the Christmas. Resounding bells break the dawning of a new day, a new year, a fresh start. A purple haze flits across the sky, reminding us why it's good to lie on the ground still. To stare at the stars, to feel their breath, breathe in and out, air. resolutions flick through the mind of what we've left behind and forgotten, our core.
Thanks so much, Joe. Next up we have, I'm sorry, I can't read it, Ken or Kev O'Brien, one of the two.
Hey Al, I'm just from Dublin for tonight, but I think it's really cool everything that's going on here tonight. There's not much like this in Dublin. There's a few things like it, and I really want to commend everyone here for doing something like this. It's pretty awesome, I suppose. Awesome is not a good word to use here, I know.
Is it Ken or Kev?
Kevin. Okay, so this is pretty much just written tonight, but it comes from a personal perspective, and it's the person it's written about deserves more than this little piece of paper. But anyway, so I sliver, slope, slide into your pupils. A merry-go-round of your memories. You're mine own love, an abyss within your brown. I would drown a million times. Never save me. Never save me. My lungs are full of love. They stop and start at your look. I missed the summer you left. I should have been there. Been there when. The crack and break of my mind. Leaves forget me. A misfigured reflection. No God can save me. I'm not time, wood, strategy, or sense. Aloof in my own mess. Never save me. Never save me. We're all played within the confines of our own environment, but they're changeable. Thank you.
Next, please welcome Mark Burke.
This is actually probably the first thing I've maybe ever written.
That's never the first thing you've written.
No, I've written poetry-wise, so don't be
Woo! Yeah!
As I'm walking down the street, I notice that we meet. I turn to you across the street to share the view with you. But then things don't seem to last as you walk past the arms of another. You turn around and you look at me, and I can see that we'll be together. But then things don't seem to last as you walk right past to the arms of another. This view to you, it's nothing new, so I won't hesitate to initiate. I've thought this through, I know what I have to do, so you won't walk past to the arms of another.
Thanks. A journey out walking. The wind blew through me from the south and from the west, The fog hung low and clouded our vision. But you could still see the sea, the vast expanse, and yes, I saw eternity in the ocean. I saw beauty in the cliffs and abyss in the mist. I felt meaning in the waves and the paths that they paved. I felt the rhythm of my journey beat in my step. I saw the future, I felt the hex. One that I was walking with turned to me and said, "Misty, isn't it? For the fog hung low and clouded our vision, ready to oppress the scene below. But you could still see beneath it, the scene was as is so." So I said, "Yes, Misty, isn't it? It is beautiful, though." Thank you.